Jane, did you know if you say my name really, really fast, it sounds like testicles?
Esther Coles, Esther Coles, Esther Coles, Esther Coles, Esther Coles. Does it?
Does a bit.
I'm not convinced.
This is Esther Coles, this is Esther Coles, this is Esther Coles,
This
this
is
is Esther
Tester Coles,
Coles.
and this is Jane Bollocks.
So what sort of week have you had then, Jane?
I've had a good week. I've been to Brighton.
Oh, did you go on the beach?
We went on the beach and had a little sleep on the beach and also walked along to Rottingdean. It's a funny name,
Oh.
isn't it? Rottingdean.
Hmm.
And we walked along the seafront and it was wild because it was so windy and the waves were crashing over the wall onto the pathway. So it was like dodgems, dodging the waves, crashing on top of you. And
Wow.
it was very atmospheric and you felt like you were really in with the elements. Now, on to more important things, our lovely bees. What's occurring? What's the latest?
Oh, well, it was very, very dramatic yesterday when I went up.
Drama? You?
More
What?
drama. Yes, more drama. Because last week, I dropped the little queen that was in the cage into the book fasts because
Yes.
my instincts were right and there wasn't a queen in there. So they were making their own new queen. And
Yes.
so there was a lot of queen cells. So I dropped that little queen cage in there. And then I thought, well, I'll just leave them to it because they'll choose the right queen. But anyway, when I went up yesterday, I got to the hive, and there on the doorstep of the hive was a queen.
Oh.
And they were like, wouldn't let her in the hive. They were pushing and pulling her. They were pulling her wings. She was dropped on the floor. Then she jumped back up. She was trying to get through the entrance. All the guards were saying no. They were stopping her. It was, yeah,
Not
it,
welcome.
yeah. That's what they were doing. And she was, they were like pulling at her wings. And yeah, and they in the end they lifted her up. One of them lifted her up and sort of flew off a bit with her, and then she flew into the air and I thought she's gone. And then she came back. And then she went straight into the hive.
Did she? Who was
I
she, this
think,
queen?
well, because there was a few queen cells,
Oh, so she was a
so
queen cell. She wasn't just some random queen that decided to pop in.
no, she was one of their queens, but of course they only want one queen. And we don't know because we didn't open, but the queen that was in that little cage was mated and she was all ready to go. So once they got her out, she could have possibly, if they'd accepted her, she could have just started laying eggs. So then what do they do with these new queens that hatch?
Can I just ask you a
And
question? Had you taken Queen Mary out of her cage?
well, I just left them to do it. So there was a bit of fondant and they
Oh,
nibbled
so,
through it.
oh, what do you mean you left them to do it?
Well, because before when I put her into the other hive, inside her cage she had some food and that was
Right.
blocking up the entrance of the cage. But also there was a little tiny piece of plastic which was like a door, and that I took that door off when I put her into the book fasts. And
Oh.
so they would have just nibbled through that fondant, that food, and then she would have come out. So
Oh.
if they accepted her and she went straight away to lay some eggs, when these queen cells hatched, they wouldn't want those queens. And also they wouldn't want to fight if they can, if they really were happy with Mary, she was called that queen in the cage, wasn't she? If
Yeah.
they were really happy with Mary, they would have just had to get rid of that queen. So they were trying to get rid of her. They wouldn't let her back
Right.
in.
Right, because you said sometimes they prefer they're making their own queen.
Yeah,
But it.
so there was a few queens being made, and I thought, oh, I'll let them sort it out. So maybe one of those queens had gone off, mated in the morning, and come back, and they were happy with that one, and they didn't want any more virgin queens coming back. So
Right.
maybe another one of those virgin queens went off and got mated and came back, and they didn't want her. They didn't want another one.
No. So do you think that it's Mary in there now and they're happy with her?
I don't know. We'll find out next week. Somebody's in there, though. They've definitely got a queen.
So with the Buckfast, you know, when they didn't have the queen, how could they have made these queen cells when they didn't have a queen? Where did the eggs come from?
So they would have just taken possibly about a 2 or 3 day old larva that was already there. And then they would have just started to make it into a queen cell and feed it a bit more royal jelly if they could gather that from any of the other little larvae cells that were, you know, on the frame, and then feed it, and then they make a queen. Because in the natural world, they would never be in this situation where they didn't have a queen cell. Or you know, if they're making a new queen to swarm, they'd have a few queen cells. But they've adapted. They've adapted with the beekeeper. Now, there's three different reasons why they make queens. One is they're not happy with the queen. She's not laying the right amount of eggs.
Yes.
She's too old.
Yes,
she's
I know that one.
Failing something. Yeah. And that's called a supersedure cell. So they just usually make one or two cells in the middle of the frame and they make a new queen and that's it.
Oh, I've not mentioned that before.
That's what the Italians did straight away when I first got them. Because, again, they were a fake lot. You know, the workers were from Italy. The queen was from Scotland. They obviously didn't feel it was a right combination. So straight away, they made these supersedure cells and got rid of the queen.
Oh, I love that name, supersedure cells. That should be the name of a band.
It could be, couldn't it? And then the next reason is they make swarm cells. So when the box of bees is so full and there's lots of nectar on the trees or in the flowers, so they've got a nectar flow, then half of the colony will fly off with the queen and they'll just set up a new home somewhere. You know, in the wild, it would be in a roof or a tree. Or if the beekeeper catches that swarm, they just pop them into another hive and off they go.
Gosh, they're always thinking ahead, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And then the third type of queen cell, if you just didn't have a queen, but the beekeeper put some eggs into a box with some bees, they would straight away make a new queen out of that. And that's called an emergency queen cell. So the bees just have to make a queen right now because they've just found out that they haven't got one. The beekeeper's taken her out, he's squashed her under a bucket, or she's dropped her into a ditch.
Right, but there's always going to be some eggs there for them to work with.
Yeah, and if they've got no eggs and they've got no larvae, then eventually the workers will try their best to make eggs themselves.
Don't they always turn into a drone?
Yeah, they always turn into a drone and nothing can ever happen, but they still try to turn into little queens themselves. It's so sad.
Aww.
But they are amazing. Like, even when everything goes wrong, they try to lay eggs, but it can never work. But they can't give up.
It's fascinating. That was all very, very interesting. The three different types of queen cells, Esther. I like that.
Oh, good. We'll have to have a test soon, won't we? See what you remembered.
Oh, too hard.
Jane, you know what I've done?
What?
I've set me mic up myself, and I'm actually on my bed. So when Peter comes on, I thought I might just lie down.
Oh yeah, and then say, Peter, does it sound like one of your shows?
Yeah, that's what I thought. What do you think?
Maybe I should lie down.
I know. Maybe we both should.
I'm going to move into a different room and lie down.
Hey up, Peter.
Here's me sitting up straight like a schmuck, being all professional and everything. I could have been just on the sofa.
Oh, is there a sofa nearby, Peter?
Jane, there's not actually at the moment. I'm actually in an auditory testing booth in a shed in the back of my garden.
That's very professional.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, if you go around, look on eBay for ropey old stuff, you come across chemists that are closing down, and I thought, rather than, it's a lot cheaper than buying a soundproof booth to record in, so I bought this thing that you climb into normally when you're getting your hearing tested, and I use that. Yeah, it's sort of like upright coffin.
Oh, really? Could you test my hearing in there then?
Certainly, Jane, if you make an appointment and we'll take you right through. It does have a certain kind of, sort of medical cryogenic suspension. This is it. You will never breathe the fresh air again. Vibe to it. But it is quiet. That's something.
Oh, I don't know whether to lie flat on the bed so I can pretend that I'm in Peter's podcast. Are you lying flat, Jane?
Not totally flat. Not as flat as I have been in a bunk bed.
I'm really moved by this fond tribute to the, speaking position. I'll probably be slightly less relaxed than you two because I'm sitting upright.
No, well, you sound very relaxed.
I'm trying really hard to sound relaxed. Jane, I'm putting an enormous amount of effort into sounding relaxed at the minute.
You don't have any access to alcohol, do you?
Well, I'm holding two things at once, if we can let your imagination run riot. A backup recorder and my phone to record this. So unless someone is going to bring me in a saucer of booze and just offer it up to my mouth, I'm stuffed, really.
I like the idea of a saucer of booze.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get very far, though, just on a saucer, would you?
No, I'd have to say to the waiter, don't go anywhere. You just stay right where you are.
You could have a long straw, like a honeybee, a long proboscis, and you could just suck the booze up from the saucer that you could sort of plastic surgery stitch to your face.
Okay, Esther. Well, how long have you got? I've only got a limited number of tools here. And so, Esther, so it's the are the male bees then just restricted to kind of guard duty, as it were?
No, they don't do any guarding. It's all the females that do the guarding.
And the collecting the honey.
Yeah, they do everything, Peter.
The men are the laziest. The bee-
oh, really?
That's
oh,
right.
Really? The drones.
Oh, okay, right.
Tell Peter what they do then, Jane. See, I'm testing
right,
you now.
They mate, so they will go out and they will mate the queen bee in the air when she's on her virgin flight. Oof. And then don't they just die after they've mated, Esther?
Yeah, they just fall down dead from the sky.
so I hope it's a good one. And then they laze about in the hive. Yeah, they have no other function but mating.
Really?
They just eat loads of honey and they go around, they buzz really loudly and then they come back and they just tuck into the honey. They're very greedy. And then at the end of the autumn, the worker bees throw them all out. So none of them are allowed to stay in the hive for the winter. They all get chucked out. And if they don't go, then they give them a little sting and then they land on the floor and then the wasps eat them.
Ah, OK. It's funny because you can draw no analogies at all with human males, can you? There's nothing in the whole story of worker bees that you could any way relate to.
I wanted to ask Esther, so not all drones, obviously, get to mate.
No.
So their life is just futile. If they don't mate, there's absolutely nothing in it for the drone, is there?
Well, they like honey. They love it.
They might have nice personalities, Jim. It's not all about the act itself.
I know, but they're not enough good enough personality to not be chucked out in the autumn.
That's true.
And they don't sting. They're kind. You know, they don't sting other bees. So they're a bit more friendly and they're bigger, they're more fluffy. They look quite cuddly. We were talking the other week about, it's an ancient thing for beekeepers to tell the bees about their problems and about their lives, and they'll sort these issues out for you, and that will help them make more honey. And, you know, it's a bit symbiotic, the relationship. And I was just thinking, what would you tell them, Peter?
Oh, blimey. Well, do you have to get to know them? I mean, or can you just start gushing about yourself and your most private thoughts to the bees? Or do you have to start with a bit of, like, chit-chat and, going anywhere nice this year, that sort of stuff? Because I think...
I don't think they mind.
No. Is it similar to, more perhaps sophisticated animals? do they pick up on your mood and your tone of voice, have you found, Esther?
Well, they don't like it if you've got a hangover. They don't like it if you've got you smell strong of bananas.
Really?
Bananas? Really?
Yeah, they can't stand bananas.
Really?
So bananas remind bees of death, really, because when a bee stings somebody, they make a pheromone that the other bees come and they can smell it, and then they might sting the person or the bear or the, you know, the badger. And banana has got the same scent of this pheromone of a dying bee.
I want to know why you smell strongly of bananas, Esther.
And they don't like anything frizzy, furry, hairy, grizzly.
Oh.
Anything animal-like.
What about a dog? They wouldn't like a dog then?
Oh, no.
What about a smooth-haired dachshund?
They might like that. They'd be a bit more accepting, maybe.
So would they sting a dog then?
Oh, yeah, they'd sting a dog. Mm. They'd sting anything if they thought it was going to ransack their hive. Mm.
So, Peter, you've been very good already asking Esther questions, but have you got anything, any sort of burning question about bees that you want to ask our expert Esther?
Yes.
Expert.
I wanted to ask you whether this was true, because I heard that whenever a big hornet came into a bee's nest or hive, they wouldn't kill the hornet, but the workers would form a kind of ball around the hornet, and the temperature at the centre of the ball would rise high enough to basically slow cook the hornet and knock the hornet out of action.
Mm. Yeah, very good.
Top
Peter.
Of the class, Peter.
Very good.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Saving the good stuff till now.
Yeah, that's good. That's interesting about hornets.
Yeah, so they'll do that to a hornet if it comes in, or a wasp. If there's enough of them and they're not getting overwhelmed, they can manage to do that. But I was saying yesterday I had to make the entrance a bit smaller on my hive, because as the summer goes on, the wasp colonies get bigger and bigger, and they start hanging around the hive because they want the honey and they love the little baby larva. So once the honey flow is finished and the bees aren't going to collect all the nectar from, like, the lime trees, which has been on this last couple of weeks, you know, if you reduce the entrance, that they can protect themselves a bit more from lots of wasps coming in, because they can manage one wasp or two or three or maybe the odd hornet, but they can't manage loads of them. But yeah, they do boil them alive, and they'll even do that to a queen as well that they don't want anymore. So if they decided the queen was too old, they'd make a new queen and they'd probably boil her to death.
Oh my goodness.
Is that what they call it? Boiling them to death?
Yeah, it's called balling them to death.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like they ball them, but also, like Peter said, they sort of boil them. Mm. So it's like...
ball.
So tell us this, Esther, why would a queen not quietly abdicate if she got wind of this and just kind of head off somewhere?
Because by that time, she's lost her mind, because she's a slave to the workers doing what they say. I mean, she exudes this amazing pheromone which keeps the colony together, but she's a slave to the colony in a way. They've discovered just recently that the queen does have some control about when it's time for her to swarm, but it's really, I think it's more of the workers that know what's happening in the hive, and she's an egg-laying machine, basically. I mean, this time of year, she's laying 2,000 eggs a day.
Blimey.
Once those eggs have run out, they want a new queen, so they might ball her to death.
Oh, my goodness. So there's no idea of, you know, she provides a constitutional, continuity, you know, a degree of sovereignty in an ever-changing world. Her Majesty the Queen Bee.
No.
And she didn't even get a funeral.
It's reminding me a little bit of the BBC and Arlene Phillips.
Oh?
And other female presenters who get a bit too old to do the job. They get bald to death, don't they?
Do they?
Move on. But, longer useful.
Do you think that they get surrounded by young, vivacious female presenters till they die?
Yes. Yes.
There, there.
Oh, brother.
I think
that.
We should call one of our queens, Arlene.
Have you ever been stung by a bee, Peter?
I have. I've had the been stung in the ear before.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
The bee, he or she.
She.
She, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Oh, so even the solo bumblebees are all female
well,
as well?
All the ones that can sting you are female because the male's got genitals instead of a sting.
Oh, that's a lot of use, isn't it? Yeah. This bee came up to me and rubbed himself in my face. Give me the sting any day. but it's interesting, the... I always got the impression that bees, you know, wasps were very aggressive. They would sort of set out to sting you just for the hell of it. Whereas bees, it was as a very last resort, they would sting you. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I wonder why that bee stung you in the ear.
I think it got frightened because it actually managed to kind of get stuck in my ear, you know, in the folds of my ear. It sounds like I've got very strange
it
large
sounds like
ears.
You're an elephant.
Yeah. But anyway,
how big are they, your ears?
Yeah, well, they're not that, yeah. But it was obviously a snuggly little enclave for this bee who then kind of went, hang on, this is unless he thought, or beg your pardon, unless she thought I was trying to, you know, trap or cup her with my ear. You know, bees aren't going to realise that my ear's just sitting there in a neutral way. So it was the proper screaming around the garden, and the noise of it buzzing in my ear was something I'll never forget. So, yeah, they had to... I can't remember the name of the stuff. Gentian Violet or something I got put on me as a sort of remedy for it, for the sting.
And did it affect your hearing at all?
No, it didn't go into my ear. It was the outer ear that was stung and damaged.
Wondered whether it, even with it being the outer ear, whether it kind of, it ballooned.
Yeah, it did balloon. It was very, very red and very sore. And I think my mum tried to take the sting out with tweezers and just basically mash the flesh around the sting site.
Oh, it sounds horrible.
This is the first time I've ever spoken about it publicly. So you'll be getting a bill from my therapist.
What sort of remedies, you know, like with jellyfish, you wee on yourself to remedy that sting? What would you do for a bee sting? What's the best
thing? I've never put anything on it, really. I've just sort of gone, ah, you bugger, like that when I get stung.
You know when you were stung. Well, you've been stung a couple of times on your private regions. What would you have put anything on there?
Can't stop laughing. Yeah, when a bee stings you, see, once a bee has stung you, it leaves a pheromone, a scent, obviously like a banana. It leaves a scent on you, and then that tells all the other bees to come and sting you.
Ooh.
Because one sting alone, you know, wouldn't be able to knock a bear out of a tree. So the bee dies, it leaves the sting, that creates like a pheromone. The other bees can all smell it and they all come out then, and then they get that bear. So what can happen sometimes is if you're doing the inspection or you're taking the honey, you get stung and that's it. Once you've been stung once, sometimes they all start coming at you. And I've been stung a lot on my legs when I've just had, you know, thin trousers on. But yeah, I've never actually had to put anything on it, really. And when I got stung on my vagina, I just quickly pulled my pants down and just tried to pull the bee out of my
the
forest.
Sting. pull the sting out.
So I'm sorry, I beg your pardon, of the forest.
You know.
Oh, yeah, well, I beg your pardon. Yeah.
I didn't put anything on it. I just went... Oh, flipping it, and, you know, ran onto the other side of my bee plot away from the bees.
With your pants down?
Well, I had to quickly pull my pants down, get the bee out. And then I was stood there with my rubber gloves on.
Were you not frightened that other bees would come? Then you had your pants down all exposed.
Yeah, well, it was the middle of winter when that happened to me. And it was just one random bee that came out, blew up my trousers, stung me on the vagina. And then that was it. I think none of the other bees got to find that didn't smell the pheromone because it was too cold. So nobody else
came
to do the.
Yeah.
Nobody else, you know, followed up.
What do you think? Because you said that they didn't like fur, so they would sting a dog or a bear. So do you think because that's a little bit of a furry area, they're more attracted to that area?
No, they just thought, flipping out, what is this? What's this sore?
Forest of metal? Dean.
Yeah, well, it was winter, Esther. No one can blame you.
Once they got stuck in the bramble of my knickers, that was the end of it. They just thought, oh, well, there's no point going back now. And they just stung me.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Things have taken a turn for the less than innocent.
We were talking, Peter, on a previous episode about if you're a bee, what bee would you be? And I think I could say bee in any more in a sentence. Esther, what bee do you think Peter would be?
Well, he'd be a drone, wouldn't he?
All right, then.
Because he is a male.
That's a bit harsh.
He's a male.
I've only tried to chat along. Drone?
Oh, I know. When I was doing a little bit of looking on the internet before, I noticed that on your Wikipedia it said that you were a carpenter.
Yeah, not a very good one.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is true, yeah. Well, I used to fit out offices and stuff in the City of London and a few listed buildings when I first came over to London. Yeah, I did that for about 7 years.
So you could be a carpenter bee.
Oh, there's a carpenter bee.
Yeah.
Oh, how fantastic.
Hey.
Yeah.
What distinguishes a carpenter bee?
They're black bees and they've almost got blue wings. And you see them, I've seen them in the south of France. I saw them once when I went to Italy. And they're called carpenter bees.
Are they massive?
Yeah, they're big, furry. They burrow into hard wood and they make their homes there in little holes or in bamboo or sort of hard plants. So yes, a carpenter bee would be very good for you, Peter.
I've seen them.
Have you seen them?
Yeah, I saw them in Siena in Italy years ago.
That's
and
right.
And I couldn't work out what they were. I thought they were tiny hummingbirds to start with.
Wow.
You know, around this bush. They really are pretty chunky. But yeah, they were bees. Oh, so they're carpenter bees. Lovely.
Oh, that's so lovely, Peter.
Yeah. Endless nights underneath starry skies. Every day is summer when you spend it here with me.
So when I pulled out a frame yesterday at the hive, there was a whole bit of natural wax that the bees had made themselves, and it was in the shape of Bono.
Oh, my goodness. The whole Bono with the high heels and everything, or just his head?
I thought it was just his head, but it looked very much like him. It was when he had long hair, and it was definitely him.
Oh.
On the wax, and we wondered what it might mean.
Does he have long hair now?
No.
See, I said Esther.
Yeah, it was him, though. It was definitely him.
But it didn't look more, because obviously the thing that people would think it would be resembling a very famous Galilean who walked the earth 2,000 years ago. Did you clock him as Bono straight away, or did you entertain the idea that the bees might have made an effigy of Jesus?
She's seen him in a potato.
Oh, everybody has.
I've seen Pavarotti in a Bellotti bean.
Oh, that was it.
But this was definitely Bono. And I wondered why, I like to take a sign from the bees. Like, why was Bono in the hive made of wax? What do you think? Why do you think he was there?
I think you probably better move most of your income to offshore accounts in the Netherlands, Esther. I think that's what they were telling you to do.
All right, then. Okay.
So I'll call you up whenever I'm feeling down.
thank you, Peter, for coming on to our show.
Oh, bless you. Well, listen, it was a really effortless bit of fun. I really enjoyed it. So thanks for asking us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank really you so great. Much.
Cheers. Take care. Thanks, Esther. Bye-bye.
Bye, Peter. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Night-night, Jane, and I'll see you next week.
Night-night, Esther.
I love you.
Love you. See you next week. Big love.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
And I'll call you up whenever I'm feeling down.
Queen Bees is written and created by Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks. It is produced by Claire Broughton and Andy Goddard and partly recorded at the Hives on my allotment near Crouch End in London. Our title music is Sweet Nothing by Amy Mae Ellis and Will Cookson. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Queen Bees Pod for pictures and videos from the Hive. Queen Bees is a Hattrick podcast.